I'm very pleased to welcome back for the second episode of View from the Roundhouse for 1926. Did I say 1926, Martin?
I think it's 2026. I'd be impressed if we were able to do something in 1926.
2026, Professor Martin Drum from the University of Notre Dame, generally based in Fremantle and roundabout. Hello, Martin.
It's always good to talk, Michael. Good to see you.
And it is. It's also nice to say hello to all of our listeners as the new year sets in. Many of them will be relaxing, and the troubles of the world, whether it's in Iran or Ukraine or sitting on the icy wharf in Greenland, wondering what's going to happen next, or dealing with hate laws in Australia, or being boycotted from the Adelaide Writers' Fest. All of these worries, Martin, amount to nothing if you're in Fremantle at the moment. Sail GP. Two-day high-speed yacht race foiling around Bathurst Beach is happening on Saturday and Sunday. The Perth Festival is about to start. The Fringe Festival's just about underway. You wouldn't know there's a world full of strife outside Fremantle, Martin. Should I feel guilty?
Well, I think you should never feel guilty purely because there's some good things happening where you are. Unless you're contributing to bad things, Michael, which I would never accuse you of.
Well, Martin, it really is a testy time. We Athens of the South used to be otherwise known as Adelaide. My Adelaide friends now tell me that it's being referred to colloquially around the traps up and down North Terrace in Adelaide as the Moscow of the South, Martin. What do you make of what's been happening there? It really shows you the reverberation from Bondi big time, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does. And, last time around, we were talking about that need to find a balance between accepting lots of different views and then people who might, say, incite violence or those sorts of things. It's a really delicate balance, and people have really different views around that. I think there's also sometimes a little bit of hypocrisy in terms of what we accept and what we don't. So just for a listener's point of view, we're talking about deplatforming. So after a Palestinian author was deplatformed, was cancelled at the Adelaide Writers' Week. She's being invited to the Adelaide Festival, I believe. We'll see whether she comes. But there's a lot of messy elements to this. So we had a Jewish author that was likewise they worked to ban him. That's exactly why he didn't come. Sometimes people are contesting, but there's people trying to ban people on all sides of this discussion as well, views that they don't agree with. And some of those views might be quite objectionable or offensive. But I think that finding a balance is going to be really tricky. And we saw this all this week. So it's still raging, Michael, the reverberations at Adelaide Writers Week. It got so bad, of course, that the board resigned and the whole week got cancelled.
And one of the funny things is Louise Adler, a prominent voice in the Jewish community, but obviously to the more conservative Jewish voices, she's a bit too far on the left for them, which goes to make the point you've made before, that there's a diversity of voices within all ethnic or racial or national groups in any event.
Oh, there certainly is. And if you look at not just the response to Bondi, but the response on hate speech or those sorts of things. We're going to come to the hate bill. Amongst Jewish groups, there's a whole range of different takes on that. Some that are very strident, others are talking about protecting free speech, trying to find a balance on that. And of course, whether the government's to blame. There's divergent views on that too.
Well, let's sort of take it in some sort of chronological order. There's no correct chronological order, but after Bondi, there were calls for urgent action, particularly from the well-known Jewish organisation spokesman and former leading politicians like Josh Frydenberg from Melbourne, himself Jewish. And he called for a royal commission pretty much straight away. And it took a little while before the Federal Royal Commission was called, and then the State New South Wales one was cancelled as a result. And Virginia Bell, a former High Court judge, now retired from that court, has been appointed to do the job. It's technically underway. We'll no doubt hear about first steps before long. But coming back to the Royal Commission, with all of what's happening, particularly Adelaide, which is some sort of litmus test, I suppose, for the challenges that are going to face anybody who's making a public inquiry into anti-Semitism and related sort of extremist viewpoints. I mean, can we be confident the Royal Commission will be able to do its job?
I think it will be extremely difficult. I think that what you'll see is some profoundly different points of view, which is all natural, but some very emotive points of view that differ wildly being put to that Royal Commission on what needs to be done about anti-Semitism. So the Virginia Bell will have to sift through all of that, and obviously her team that working on that will have to sift through all of those different things to try to navigate a path and come to some definitive conclusions. I wouldn't want to be in her seat. I think it's one of the, it'll be one of the trickier royal commissions for her to undertake.
A lot of people have asked me having been involved in a Royal Commission back in 1991, 92, the WA Inc Royal Commission as one of the council assisting, whether this will drag on. The WA Inc Commission was set up for 12 months, was extended into a second 12 months. But it strikes me, Martin, this is a Royal Commission that will have to, absolutely have to, report no later than the 15th of December this year, which is the anniversary of the Bondi Massacre. I can't see it being extended beyond that date. What about you?
I probably could. It certainly has to report, and but that could be an interim report, done this time, done late this year. But I could see that happening just because of the complexity of the issues that they're trying to work through. If it was just an inquiry into the security services ahead of that Bondi attack and what could or couldn't be done, I think that would be more straightforward. Because it's actually inquiry into anti-Semitism and social cohesion, very broad topic. I think there's a lot of different matters to canvass. So it wouldn't surprise me if it does drag out, Michael.
If there is an interim report, and I agree with you, there can be interim reports. I'd have thought the good one to bring down would be the interim report based on Dennis Richardson's report that they're going to get before too many months. Get that out of the road and then deal with those big cultural issues, anti-Semitism, how you deal with it, what sort of laws you need. You need to enhance the laws you've already got, and the broader question of social cohesion, which must necessarily bring into account other extremist groups in Australia, not to mention the neo-Nazis, but there are others as well. Martin, which brings us then back directly to the scrambling, as it looks like, from the Prime Minister to respond not only to Bondi with the Royal Commission, but to urgently bring before the Parliament the Omnibus Bill, which included gun control, gun buyback, gun controls nationally. But also dealing with hate laws as such. Fremantle Shipping News has picked up the government publications and it's put out the fact sheet explaining what's in the hate laws. But it looks like the Coalition and the Greens don't want to play ball. They're complaining they don't have enough time or they want to think about it. And I suspect there are divergent views in any event. The gun lobby don't want the gun laws. Sydney Morning Herald this morning has a big editorial on free speech. I suspect the Fremantle Shipping News will get to that point at some point. But do you rate the hate laws as currently proposed any chance of passing the Parliament?
I think they're looking really dicey in terms of getting through. I'd be surprised if they get an easy passage, but I'd also be surprised if they pass quickly. You pointed out it's a bit of an omnibus. One of the coalition's critiques, and I think it's probably a fair one, is that you're dealing with hate speech. You're dealing with the cancellation of visas, and you're dealing with a national gun buyback scheme. Three very different things in the one bill, and three different positions that a political party may have. I would imagine, for instance, the Greens would be more supportive of the gun buyback scheme, but maybe they're worried about one of the other two areas. I'd expect the coalition, especially the National Party, are very sceptical about more gun laws, but they might consider the cancellation of visas. There's a lot of things bound up in the one bill there, and those political parties will probably want to respond differently to different parts of that bill.
Martin, it sort of reminds me of the stall gift. Have all these professional runners, but you don't all start on the same line. Some of you who apparently got better form than others get sent back another 100 metres, probably not quite that far. But in some ways, that's where the PM, Anthony Albanese, started in this response to Bondi, a good 100 metres back. And now he's trying to catch up really quickly. Although the cynic in me says, well, look, let's put all of these proposed laws in the parliament. And if they get responded to, well, you know, what do we say? We say we did our very best. But maybe their heart isn't in it, Martin. Am I being too cynical?
No, that's an interesting point. And certainly the Prime Minister needs some runs on the board here, because some of the criticism is that he's taken too long to respond to it, or that he doesn't have a clear plan, all these sorts of things. And I think this bill's it politically is an attempt to respond to that and say, look, I do have some clear ideas here, some things that need to be done. So that's the politics of it. And if he passes that bill, then he's got something to point to. In the short term, at least, ahead of the Royal Commission and the Richardson work, but I think it is it's that strategy is looking pretty dicey at the moment. And part of it is that this was done by a press conference. The because of the complexity of the nature of these things, the political parties are going to need, and those independents and the upper house, etc., are going to need time to think this.
Well, the good thing about it all is, Martin, that it looks like it's slowing down a little bit, which does mean that we in Fremantle can start to enjoy the Fringe Festival, get ready for the Festival of Perth, get to sail GP foiling down on Bathurst Beach over the weekend. Lots of other sailing regattas coming up. As I say, feeling a fraction guilty, particularly when I look at the media and I see terrible pictures and stats about what's happening in Iran. And I really don't know what to make of that. You know, it looks to me as if President Trump doesn't know what to make of it either. What do you make of it, though?
Oh, well, I think it's really significant development. We've seen in Iran an ongoing, over every couple of years almost, some more protests break out. These people are very, very brave. The penalty for protesting, if they get hold of you, especially leading a protest, it's probably death in many cases. And there have been thousands of protesters that appear, according to reports. We don't know the exact figures. They've been gunned down or executed or killed. So they're paying a very heavy price for protesting. As with many of these protests, they start with an economic impetus, and the cost of living going up, the impact of international sanctions, the inability of the regime to respond to the needs of the people. And then they coalesce into a direct attack on the regime's legitimacy. So it's a quite a significant development. And then you had Donald Trump kind of threaten to use violence, made a comment, help is on its way. Which is a bit cryptic. What does that actually mean? It appears to have walked that back for the time being. It's always difficult to know with Trump, but he could just turn around tomorrow and say bomb something somewhere. The problem the US has got is if they do intervene, it's twofold. One is that they make the problem theirs. At the moment, it's an internal mess within within Iran. It becomes their mess if they intervene. And the second thing is that if they do intervene, there's always that challenge that the whole revolt gets seen as more of a US-induced revolt, or agents of foreign influence kind of thing. So I think that's two concerns. The first one might just be the biggest one for Trump. Does he really want to get involved in? We saw what happened in Iraq. That was a messy conflict that went on for many years. It's still a fairly unstable democracy, if you can call it that, there in Iraq. A lot of people who don't like the regime and are worried about its human rights abuses are also equally worried about what comes next if it collapses. So there's a real inflection moment there, and a lot of us are having close watch on how it unfolds.
The Australian Government Foreign Affairs put out to people interested a daily email called or telling us how dangerous some countries are. And you get your warnings. Yesterday's the whole of the Middle East, Turkey, Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Egypt, UAE, the whole of the Emirates, Yemen, Iraq, Iran. Who have I missed out? All an unpredictable situation. Interestingly, it seems that in the UAE and Israel, at least, they're suggesting to Trump that he not go belting in. But again, the cynic in me says, well, I think the Israelis would love to do what they've tried before and send one of their sort of below radar missiles into a building where they believe the leadership of Iran is. I mean, it must be a worry.
I think there's some. I imagine if you're the Ayatollah Khamenei, you'd be worried because you never know what's coming next. And I would say, yeah, a bomb may well be dropped. There'd be other senior leaders of the regime, and also they'd be very nervous and unable to sleep at night. So it's part of Donald Trump's strategy anyway, as we've talked about, Michael, to keep everyone guessing a little bit. Of course, that makes it very hard for his allies, but. You don't really know what's coming next.
Well, and one thing you can be sure of, can't you? They're not about to turn their religious and military style government with the people who are currently in it into some sort of post theocracy, military democracy, are they? I mean, how do you get transition when this sort of thing happens?
Well, there've been very few instances where transitions happened seamlessly. Probably one example I can think of that's pretty good and is Indonesia, which has happened right on our doorstep. 270 odd million people. They had the Suharto regime. They did have put in a transitional president that oversaw the holding of elections from the same ruling group, but obviously granted certain concessions in the lead up to that. It can be done, but there's far more examples of bloody messes and horrible civil war that exist than that one good example. So that's what I think people are worried about.
Martin, less violent in the usual sense of armed conflict than is happening currently in Iran and round about is Greenland. I mean, the US are not giving up. They're sending people off there. They're meeting people. I mean, it's the classic old-fashioned, 5 centuries BC's putting your troops right around the walled city and waiting them out. Smoking them out, starving them out. Is Greenland going to fall?
Well, the rhetoric around from Trump and other people in his administration around Greenland has only ramped up in recent days. It seems to become more strident. He seems to be saying there's no other solution that's acceptable to him except that they take it over. It probably it, that which is interesting to me. I just wondered whether he might have been better off suggesting that there's a range of alternatives or the range of different things. There's with Trump and the art of the deal, you never quite know if he's proposing a takeover so that he can get something else in return. Is it more military bases in Greenland? Is it access to their minerals? Is it mining rights? Is it, other things that he's actually seeking there that may not actually require a full takeover? If so, you'd be trying to keep all those options on the table, wouldn't you?
What did you make of a very strange Russian contribution to the discussion? Namely, you'd better Greenlanders sell out to Trump quickly, otherwise we'll come and get you.
I think there's people in Russia, including probably Putin, who find this really intriguing, and certainly a major stoush between NATO allies. I think he'd be enjoying watching that. And look, there is probably a desire by Russia and China to improve their access to shipping lanes, particularly as those ice belts, ice sheets melt due to climate change. So those sorts of things will become big factors. Whether that's best served from an actual US taker is an entirely different matter, Michael.
Martin, I have one other big question for you before we finish. A slightly shortened view from the roundhouse today. I have to get down to a presser as a fully accredited media representative of the Fremantle Shipping News to the Sail GP down at Bathurst Beach. I'm becoming a sailor quite soon, Martin. But while I prepare for that, I've also been reading Nikki Savva's recently published book, Earthquake, where she dragged me through the last federal election, not only that one, but the one that preceded it. I was quite exhausted. But she reminded me that a lot of people thought that after Anthony Albanese got re-elected, if he did, it wouldn't be so long before Jim Chalmers ascended the throne. And the same question must be being asked around the traps, and I suspect deep in the corridors of the Labour Party machine. Would that be the case, do you think?
Well, there's no doubt that Jim Chalmers would have ambitions. I think he's hinted as much. I don't think he's ever denied that he'd like to take on the leadership one day. Of course, he's affirmed his loyalty to Albanese at the same time. He's not only, a younger candidate, but he's also got very good communication skills. And those strong communication skills would seem quite attractive every time you've got a communication issue in government. So, I mean, it certainly has been a tricky end to the year and tricky start to the year for Albanese. The thing, though, that you've got to keep in mind is that he would have a lot of political leverage li emanating from a thumping election victory, a really strong election victory. So, I think he's still got a lot of capital in that party room. And he says he's going to be staying on, but you never quite know, Michael. And every leader says they're staying on until the moment they pull their pin. So
Well,
you
Mark,
never quite know.
we're only 2 years away from the next federal election. Time flies. So, when's the optimal time if you're going to change leaders?
You've got to give the new person at least a year, at least a year. So he's got 12 months if he was to make that call. Not many. You've got to keep in mind Robert Menzies, 1966, was the last person to hang up his boots voluntarily. Long time ago, long time ago. Not many. They usually have to be crowbarred out of the role. So this would be a pretty fascinating turn of events if that had ever actually happened, and he stepped down voluntarily rather than being pressured by his party.
So, Martin, are you making predictions?
I don't think we're going to see anything on Albanese moving down this year. So, and if it was next year, that's a very short window.
Well, listeners, you heard it first here on Fremantle Shipping News, view from the Roundhouse with Professor Martin Drum. Martin, thanks for joining me today. It's going to be a hell of a year. I think we're going to have to visit the gym a little more often to stay fit enough. You have to stand on one leg for at least 30 seconds each day, Martin. Have you done that today?
Oh, no. I've got one leg on each side of the fence.
Dangerous position to be in, Martin. See you next week.
Always a pleasure.